Welcome back to Money in America with Randall Turner. Today, my special guest is Kirk McKenzie. Kirk is the author of the book, Money, Defending Your Prosperity. Kirk, welcome aboard.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me on again.
We're always tickled to talk to you. You have such interesting insights, and of course, your book is awesome. And now, some of our listeners will remember we've talked before. Now, Kirk did a webinar this past week with in conjunction with libertyinamerica.org. Can you tell me a little bit about what was on the webinar?
Well, it was kind of a very short synopsis of some of the history and problems and implications of our monetary system, and then also thoughts on basically how we need to go forward to get our country back, how we have to kind of separate issues to figure out what's really important and to focus on those that I think will truly make a difference.
Okay. Now, obviously, you circled the wagons around the money issue. We were just talking a minute ago. Tell me about the presence that you see, I can't think of the right term other than conspiracy, but something along the lines of the powerful money interests had a interest, at the very least, in seeing these people's demise. Tell me about the different presidents you see that involved with.
Well, you know, if you go back to the monetary history of the United States, I think the monetary history is really where people need to study. And I'll tell you something, if you like mystery novels or suspense novels or intrigue, history turns out to be far more interesting than watching a novel or reading a novel. The intrigues begin from the time of our country forward, and as I studied the history of the legislation, the presidents, and different events, one comes to realize that there is a battle for control of the United States, and it's largely between our federal government and our presidents, and one after another, they're warning us about the money power and their attempts to take control of the country. And so there are key points in time where there's monetary legislation, monetary policies that are taking place, and what's fascinating is a correlation between that and presidential assassinations. We have, for example, the first assassination attempt on the U.S. president is President Andrew Jackson. He had vetoed the Second Bank of the United States. This was the third attempt to establish a central bank of the United States. And the assassination attempt failed, but this is during a period of time when he is battling with Nicholas Biddle, who was the president of Second Bank of the United States, who was trying to get the renewal of that bank's charter, and Andrew Jackson stood in the way. The second one, you know, this is Abraham Lincoln's assassination. Abraham Lincoln, in order to fund the Civil War, broke faith with the Constitution and began to print paper money, which is unconstitutional. And he went through a sequence of three different types of paper money to do that, demand notes in 1861, legal tender notes in 1862. And then in 1863, he does a deal with the devil, which is the National Banking Act, which puts into place national bank notes, which are the precursor of the Federal Reserve notes that are issued by the privately owned banks. And if you read the quotes from Abraham Lincoln, one comes to realize he understands he did a deal with the devil. He knows that there is a battle here. And 5 months before he is assassinated, he's warning the American people and expressing his views that he's more concerned about the bankers as the enemy against the Union than he is about the South. And then when the renewal period comes up for the National Banking Act, these are given 20-year charters, so they have to be renewed every 20 years. The sitting president during the period of time is Garfield. He is against renewal of the bank's charter. He expresses that view. He's assassinated in 1881, and then the charter is renewed in 1882. The same thing is repeated with McKinley, who is the sitting president. He's against now the third charter period, the renewal of the National Bank Act, and in 1901, he's assassinated. This is what puts Teddy Roosevelt in office, who was a New York banking family. And the charter is renewed. And then we get into the election of 1912. Those that are familiar with Glenn Beck know what he feels about Woodrow Wilson, who was elected in 1912 and who fundamentally is responsible for changing the course of our country. And the sitting president is Taft. Taft is Republican, popular, during a time of prosperity.
Right.
So how do you get this kind of wooden, stiff, not too friendly, and relatively unknown professor, Woodrow Wilson, elected? And the answer appears to be that Teddy Roosevelt, who was a Republican, runs against the Republican incumbent as an independent on the Bull Moose Party, a party that exists for only this election. It splits the conservative vote, and the Democrat, Woodrow Wilson, gets into office and then subsequently works towards enactment of world government and Federal Reserve Bank and national income tax. And then we have JFK. He was enacting three different policies that would circumvent the power of the Federal Reserve System, one of which was the printing of legal tender notes, which would allow the government to go ahead and issue money without actually having a borrower, to putting the people into debt. And 5 months after he began printing those, he's assassinated. So it turns out there seems to be pretty high correlation here that suggests that there is quite a bit more intrigue and relationship between all these events that we look at historically as being isolated events, and instead of perhaps being more pieces of one giant jigsaw puzzle that we have to assemble.
What was it, your book that I read, the LBJ's first order as soon as JFK was assassinated, was to revoke the executive order that basically was trying to circumvent the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, the Kennedy executive order is 11,110. You can look it up. He was essentially allowing the Treasury Department to reenact renew printing these legal tender notes. And as soon as Johnson takes office, he immediately stops printing those, and they are rapidly removed from circulation most likely by the banks. And so they disappear from circulation.
Well, given all this talk, let me ask you maybe not so dumb a question. Is it possible to be elected president of this country without the banking powers behind you?
It's possible, but only if the people wake up. Because if you have the power to print money, you have really ultimate power except for the power over the people, people standing up, because they can... They own the mass media. They control New York Times and Wall Street Journal and ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS. I mean, all television comes from New York City. They have the tools and the mechanisms that they have carefully assembled as part of what I call their tower of power to be able to have influence on public opinion and then direct influence on the presidential candidates through their control of the money and their ability to put large sums of money into the hands of candidates that favor them and to buy out candidates directly. And they have systematically done this. So we're at a point where it's money versus the people, and if the people want their money and their prosperity and the liberty back, then they're going to have to regain control of the money.
So we know that the big money behind
it.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Only if there's a big awakening and then informed people then begin to look kind of candidates that will have the integrity and the courage to enact the kind of the changes that need to happen.
Wow. So what we've learned from Glenn Beck is the big money behind Obama is Soros. Who is the big money behind Bush then?
But I think Soros is the newcomer. I mean, if you go back in time and look at who's really behind central banking, this all begins in 1773 under Rothschild, who lays out the principle that you can take control of the world if you take control of the world's money, and has systematically done that. The United States, the Rockefellers are preeminent, the Morgans, like J.P. Morgan.
Right.
He is a key player, the Warburgs and so forth. But chief among those that's probably really fundamentally changing our country is David Rockefeller. He's behind the United Nations, government. He is behind the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers. He is behind 1099, withholding tax. I mean, you name it, he's the guy behind the scenes. And it's pretty enlightening to listen to Aaron Rousseau on YouTube talking about his personal contact with Nick Rockefeller and their view of the rest of humanity, and they pretty much view us like animals, and that, you know, our lives really don't much have a vision of where they want the world to go. They have the money to do it and the power, and that's where they're going to go unless we...
Wow. Well, none of this has been... It doesn't give me a lot of hope here, frankly. What is our hope going forward here? To find more people like Ron Paul and Rand Paul? Is that the big goal?
Yeah, I think we have to. I think that, you know, the solutions are actually pretty easy. They're just very difficult. I mean, it really gets down to the people. Does democracy work? Or, you know, or do the people, you know, a government of, by, and for the people work? The people are naive. They are ill-informed. They don't understand the truth. And how many of them will actually take the time to learn? And then of those who learn, how many will not just try and protect their own butts, but actually work together as a cohesive fashion to get more people on board this issue and then, you know, elect presidents and candidates? I think at this point in time, the only candidate on the horizon that would fundamentally solve, you begin to address the foundation of this tower of power that would begin to fundamentally get our country back is Ron Paul.
Wow.
And I think the more people understand about the truth of, you know, things and the monetary system, the more people will come to a recognition of that fact. But whether it's Ron Paul or somebody else, the person that we need to elect is an Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson is the guy who went, picked the fight with the bankers and won. There was an assassination attempt, as I mentioned, in his life. He was a frontier woodsman. He had been successful in the war. He was not anyone to trifle with. And it was during his administration, the only 2 years in the entire history of our government from 1791 forward, it's the only 2 years we ever had no debt at the federal level with Andrew Jackson. And so he had both the knowledge of the monetary system, he had the commitment to represent the people's interests and the guts to do it, and that's who we need.
Kurt, we're going to take a brief pause, and we're going to be right back on Money in America.